This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The Gateless Barrier, Case 19. Ordinary mind is the Tao. Chao Chu asked Nan Chuan, "What is the Tao?" Nan Chuan said, "Ordinary mind is the Tao." Chao Chu asked, "Should I try to direct myself toward it?" Nan Chuan said, "If you try to direct yourself, you betray your own practice." Chao Chu asked, "How can I know the Tao if I don't direct myself?" Nan Chuan said, "The Tao is not subject to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blankness. If you truly reach the genuine Tao, you will find it as vast and boundless as outer space. How can this be discussed at the level of affirmation and negation?" With these words, Chao Chu had sudden realization. Woman's comment. Questioned by Chao Chu, Nan Chuan lost no time in showing the smashed tile and the melted ice, where no explanation is possible. Though Chao Chu had realization, he could confirm it only after another 30 years of practice. Wu Men's verse. Spring comes with flowers, autumn with the moon. Summer with breeze, winter with snow. When idle concerns don't hang in your mind, that is your best season. This session marks the 20th anniversary of the founding of Ordinary Mind Zendo, my beginning as a teacher. So I thought it fitting to discuss our eponymous koan. Two decades ago, we started out as a small group in the village. 20 years later, we've become a small group on the Upper West Side. But somehow, in those intervening years, Pat and Karen and Claire and Bob, Mark and Andrew have emerged as teachers. And has spread the Dharma and reached out to people, places, in all sorts of ways that would be beyond me. And so I'm continually gratified and proud and surprised at all the ways this Dharma continues to be spread, really, by these wonderful people. I think too often in Zen we think in terms of a kind of linear narrative of transmission, handing down the family business from one generation to another. But in reality, it's much messier than that. Spreads in all sorts of diverse and diffuse ways. Teacher to student, into the culture. Quite wonderful and quite unpredictable to knowing what will bring about what. Who will hear a turning word and have their life transformed. This koan presents us with kind of fundamental dichotomy between ordinary mind and the Tao. In a way that's, you know, parallels the dog and Buddha nature in the koan of Mu. Two things that seem to be opposite are brought together for us to contemplate and resolve the apparent contradiction. Because as I've said many times in many ways, for most of us, our ordinary mind is the problem. We don't think it's the Tao. Our ordinary mind is the mind of confusion and anxiety and suffering that we come to practice. To do what? What do we imagine is going to transform it? And what do we imagine we're going to transform it into? Nanchuan here is telling the young Chaochu, Joshu, that ordinary mind, as it is, manifests the way. It's not something to seek. It's not something that needs transformation or purification. One needs rather to simply recognize it for what it is. Joshu's natural inclination is to make a project out of his practice. I want to direct myself towards what I'm aiming for, away from the parts of myself that are causing me pain. Yet that whole project itself is perpetuating the very confusion and problem he comes to practice. Try to resolve. So often in Buddhist literature we hear talk about no self. And it's a very seductive idea, even when we don't quite understand what it means, because all of us come with the idea that in some way the self is the problem, the way our ordinary mind is the problem, and no self seems to promise a way in which it's going to get rid of the damn thing. Just once and for all, I just won't have to deal with it, right? And what's going to be left, right? All our fantasies of realization inevitably are versions of the cloudless sky, the mind empty of thoughts, free from emotional reactivity. somehow impervious to sickness, old age, and death, somehow completely autonomous and not dependent, emotionally attached, needy of anything or anybody. One way or another, these are the curative fantasies we all aspire to. And one way or another, practice has to deconstruct them and let us see what it is to actually simply stay with our mind as it is, which turns out to be a simple but difficult thing. Because we don't like it, and we're always avoiding it and always trying to fix it. And basically we enlist meditation as the mode we have of trying to lobotomize ourselves in the name of spirituality. So what is the alternative if we don't enlist meditation as Chao Chu here is, you know, as a young man naturally trying to do? What does it mean to see it as the Tao? Nansen says, when you really see the Tao, it's as empty and vast as outer space. And But if the ordinary mind is the Tao, can you say that about your mind, that it's vast and open as space? Is it big enough to contain everything? Is it so big and so vast you can't possibly control it or cut it down or package it or make it tamed? In his commentary on this case, Robert Aiken is trying to look at this phrase, ordinary mind, and says, you know, the original characters of this include words for usual or normal, but the etymology is constant or eternal. And he says, this constant ordinary is not the commonplace mind of self-centered preoccupation. Selfish conduct, speech, and thought obscure the vast moonlit mind of Nanchuan. Now we might want to challenge him a little bit on this, on a number of counts. First of all, it's very easy to romanticize ordinary mind as a simple and natural mind. There's certainly in the Chinese literature a kind of romanticization of a kind of noble savage, you know, in figure of the sixth patriarch, a illiterate woodcutter who was spontaneously enlightened. And there's a great, a vast complex literature about these supposedly illiterate, simple people who embody the Tao. It's very easy to say the way to have the right kind of ordinary mind is this mind of chop wood and carry water, the mind that's uncluttered by thought and conception and intellectualization. And so that the goal of practice is somehow to get us out of our heads, often with, you know, something like work practice of endlessly sweeping the floor or wiping something down, as if, you know, this brings us closer to our true selves through mindless manual labor. It's certainly true that sometimes people who just spend all their time in their heads can benefit from doing physical things. But we should also remember in the Sandokai, it says, reading words, you should grasp the great reality. The reading words is usually presented as the opposite of the great reality. It's reading words as being conceptual and intellectual and indirect, right? And it doesn't mean that reading words you'll intellectually understand the great reality. It means that see even reading words as one manifestation of the great reality. That words and language are as natural to you as a human being, you know, as song is to birds. That reading and writing and thinking are just totally natural parts of being human. We're not trying to get rid of them, and we're not trying to scrape them off the surface to get down to something pure underneath. We just want to see them as natural activities, and there's not a problem with them. It is very tempting, not just tempting, but almost impossible to avoid the picture of practice as a purification process. No matter how much we here avoid picking and choosing, we say, well, I guess what we have to stop is picking and choosing, and I'm going to get rid of that part of myself. There's a way in which the mind as it is, this ordinary mind, is very hard to recognize as identical to the absolute that we all say we're seeking. Now, when Aiken says this sort of ordinary self-centered mind is not what Nansen is talking about, it's true that if you start from the position of self-centered reactivity, it's not easy to find your way to seeing each moment as manifesting the Absolute. Coming from that place, going to the Absolute, is like two arrows meeting in midair. You know, it's very unlikely these things are going to meet. You come from the other direction, from the perspective of the Absolute or the Way, then it's like a box and its lid. They just automatically fit together. You see everything it manifests is a manifestation of the Way. This was Joko's basic way of teaching. She wanted people to just stay with each moment's experience, including each moment of thought and emotion and resistance, anxiety and anger, and say, just this, just feel that. We're not trying to get anywhere, we're just trying to not avoid it. Just stay with that, that's it. It's a hard lesson and a hard practice. When in the commentary, Wuman says that even when Chao Chu realizes this, it took him another 30 years to fully mature in it. The way I understand that is that it's very common more or less, for people to have some momentary experience of this is it, right? A moment in which, for whatever reason, everything is just all right. You know, that the struggle stops, the search stops, the sense of having something wrong or being off balance just drops away, and for that moment, everything is just it, it's just fine. Right? And we don't know what to make of that most of the time. But typically, we become enamored of it as a state of consciousness, and say, that was very cool, I want more of that. And so that we go from thinking that the moment, regardless of its content, is something we can just be with, and that's it, to having the experience of that, it be a special state of consciousness we try to cultivate and reproduce and hold on to. And that's sort of one of the basic Zen sicknesses everybody catches with one degree of virulence or another in the course of this practice. See, the maturing of Chao Chu's realization, in a certain sense, means an end to that kind of dissociation where stops privileging some special state is it. When asked about enlightenment, Joko would explain it by asking, well, would you be okay if you found out you just had a month to live? Would you be okay if you were publicly humiliated? Would you be okay if you had your arms and legs amputated? You know, she had quite a list of things, you know. All of which were designed to say, enlightenment is not some special state of consciousness you get into and hold on to forever. It's, are you able to simply be present with the next thing in your life, whatever its content, and just, that's it. This is what's happening. This is me. Not with no comparison, no complaint, no struggling to get out of it, just occupying that moment. This is it. That's my life now. That was her way of explaining enlightenment to people. And she explained it that way, you know, mostly people didn't want it anymore. One way or another, this practice has to wear down all those splits between what's happening and what we want to happen, and our attempts to make practice into a purification project, like, you know, in our meal chant where we say at the end, may we exist like a lotus at home in muddy water. We really want to be at home in the muddy water, and the muddy water is, of course, the muddy water of our mind, right? And the mud is all the nutrients, and the nutrients are our thoughts and our emotions and our attachments. We're at home in that. We're not here to be the one pure thing in an impure world, and we're not here to purify the world, to bring it into conformity with some vision of you know, some kind of esoteric Buddha nature. It's in the mud, right? Well, no doubt much of this is familiar with you. I've been saying the same damn thing for 20 years. The verse at the end, where he talks about the seasons, spring comes with flowers, autumn with the moon, summer's with breeze, winter with snow. I think it's easy enough to see those as stages in your life. Youth, old age, health, sickness. As Joko would ask, are you all right with each one of those as they come? We can see each one of those seasons as self states. The mind when it's calm, mind when it's upset. Are we all right with each one of the states that our mind cycles through as we sit here? See, that's what Sesshin really does, is it allows you to go through lots and lots of seasons in the course of one weekend, right? Your mind won't. If what you want is for your mind to be in a state of eternal sunshine, well, that's not going to work so well in the course of a sesshin. The problem is it'll probably work for a little bit. You'll have moments of it, right? There actually can be times when everything is looking pretty good. But then you have knees and ankles, and you're sleepy, or you're tired, or you start daydreaming, or God forbid you start thinking about the election. See, all these things are the seasons. And it does no good to say, oh my God, I've got to stop thinking about that. I want to get my mind right back here in this. You know, this is a Zen retreat. We're going to think of, you know, only really Zen things, right? Well, it's how do we handle ourselves in all those states? Not can we just get into one and hold on for dear life, right? Let me tell you, that won't work. I must say, it's been quite an experience and quite an honor to be a teacher here for 20 years. I can't imagine what the next 20 will be like, but I couldn't imagine the first 20, so who knows? Good luck.